breathe.
You are alive.
Stillness is not the enemy. It's the only balm.
It is the spark that wakes you up.
Remember who you are.
Who are you? Are you what you do? How you perform? Different acts every hour. Are you brilliant? Burning? Beautiful? Or are your fires uncontrolled? Pulled in every direction? Can you admit you may be tired? Exhausted even? Are you your fears? Your wants? Your needs? Are you the good and the bad words you use to describe yourself? Some of the time, at least. Are you your inconsistencies? Are you afraid to look at yourself? Afraid to remember? We make ourselves up, put ourselves out there, as works of art, as entertaining shows, for the world to see, to judge, to notice. You are a work of art, but not how you think.
It's in your eyes. When you laugh, when you smile, when you're angry, when you cry, you can't hide it. It leaks out and flashes across your face.
Your soul bursts through in moments of true tenderness, when the empathy just kind of swells up from nowhere, from very deep. You are in there. Divine, why are we so afraid of it? Why do we try to bury it alive in schedules and important deadlines and hurrying?
We have let too much in, crowded ourselves out, forgotten our purpose, forgotten to show up.
Pause. Sit with yourself. Sit with a neighbor. Sit with me. Notice, when you are quiet, how the divine whispers. Notice all things. Just be in the present for a moment. Remember to breathe, love. You are alive.
Galen Lee, the woman who just heard, is a Duluth singer-songwriter violinist. In 2016, she won the National Public Radio Tiny Desk Concert, and she's been on the road ever since until coronavirus hit. Galen is a vocal and powerful force and speaker for disability rights, inner freedom, and accessibility in the arts. She's back with us right now on KAXE and KBXE. Thank you so much for taking our call today, Galen.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course. How are you and your husband holding up right now during the pandemic?
Obviously every day is a little different and not every day is super happy, I guess. But overall, we are really super lucky. We have a cute little apartment that we are very grateful for, and we have each other, and we're just trying to find ways to adjust in their new world, I guess, and stay in touch with people remotely because we're pretty, we're self-isolating, and so we're just kind of trying to figure out what that looks like. And, every day is different, I guess, and yet every day is exactly the same. It's a very weird time.
It is a weird time. Just off the top of my head, how have you been? You said you've been connecting with people virtually. What you been doing?
Well, I have three or four different groups of friends that we try to get together on Zoom, you know, once a week or every other week. And so that has been really nice. You know, I think one thing that it's made really clear to me with the coronavirus, the people that are staying home are getting back to things that probably were always important to them, but they just didn't always make time for. And that actually feels pretty fulfilling. And so, you know, getting in touch with them, and then I played like virtual categories with my parents last Sunday, and that was pretty fun. And then just trying to think of things that Paul and I can do here, you know, but staying in touch with people has mostly been just conversations over Zoom and stuff, but trying to mix them up with things like games now that we've been doing it for a while, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's just cool. Like, some games do translate pretty well. Like, I think we're going to try Pictionary and Taboo. My parents are going to drop off, like, half the deck of cards at our house, and then we'll trade back and forth. Yeah, so I think it'll work. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know.
We're getting better at this all the time, I have to think. But thank goodness the weather's nice, and we can have the sun pouring into our windows and things like that.
Yeah.
How are you finding ways to keep your music and your creativity going? Are you feeling more inspired, or is it kind of ebbing and flowing?
It's turning a corner now. I got to admit, the first month, I noticed I've had depression off and on, you know, forever, I guess. And so the first month I was noticing a pretty like sharp decline in creativity, and then just kind of an increase in general sadness or whatever. But I've been seeing a counselor, which has been really helpful, and just kind of recognizing it and being like, well, of course, there's a pandemic. This is a weird time. And so I've been noticing the last week or so feeling more inspired to, you know, pick up my instrument and or, you know, I wrote like a little parody song. It's not out yet, but I will be working on that. And so I have like fun little projects to do. The thing that's been keeping me going though is I have decided really early on, like back on March 20th, to do a weekly concert on YouTube Live. And that is really fun because the thing I love to write, but writing has always been something that kind of just happens when I am inspired, more or less, you know. It's not something that I felt like I sit down and force. Sometimes I try to, right? But most of my writing has come from a more organic place than that. And so I was wondering, you know, how I was going to adjust to this, because the thing I love about music is performing it. That's the thing that gives me the most energy out of all the things that I do, in terms of like, you know, get me out of bed and like, this is what I'm doing today. You know, I love performing. And so the online performances have really helped keep my sense of momentum, I guess, going forward. And it really is fun to connect with people. It's not the same, and it's maybe not like better than, but there is something kind of cool about meeting virtually in this space with people from all over the world. Because we have toured a lot, and that Tiny Desk video is obviously been viewed all over the world. People join those concerts from different countries and different cities, and it's pretty fun to have this little community of people that come together every week, every Sunday at 2.
Sunday at 2. Well, as somebody who has been tuning into these concerts from you and other performers, we're just drinking it up. We're so grateful that you're sharing your gifts with the world online while we're all sort of stuck. What was your travel schedule like before this all happened?
I know, that's the weirdest thing. We traveled a lot. You know, this year, it's sort of, I think if it had to happen any year, this year is okay with me, because I was hoping to be home most of the summer to write a book. I'd like to write about the last 2 years, just from the perspective of a disabled touring artist and the things I've learned about disability rights on the way, and just the kind of experience of traveling with your husband in a very DIY music career setting. And so I was planning to be home most of like May through August this year anyways, I was going to do little, like, regional things, but not do a ton. But until then, we had been going, like, you know, 6 to 9 months of the year we would be gone doing shows. I think I did about 150 to 200 shows a year, depending on the year. And so we really weren't home very much. But that has very drastically changed, obviously. And it was so weird to look back. Our last tour was out to New Orleans, which I had never been to. And it was amazing. And my parents came down. And it was just really, really, really fun. And to know that that was the last trip, I had no idea, obviously, because we were on our way to Colorado when we decided to turn around in March and come home and cancel the tour. We were going to be out there. But yeah, I didn't know that that New Orleans trip would be the last one for a while. But it was a lot of good memories, so I'm glad that that was the one that we ended on.
No kidding. Well, I want to talk a little bit about disability rights, since I've got you on the phone and you're such a powerhouse about this stuff. During the pandemic, there is fear that laws in place to protect and give independence to people living with disabilities might be ignored. Can you talk about what you're seeing and what you want us to understand in terms of where things are at in that realm?
Yeah, well, you know, there is a lot of inequality around disability still, even with the laws like the ADA, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act that was signed in 1990, there's a lack of enforcement. And so you'll see, you know, a lot of businesses that have opened since 1990 still aren't accessible, and it's hard to get work accommodations, you know, the right way and stuff like that. And so there's still issues with accessibility, and it extends, especially in sharp relief in a pandemic like this, because the other kind of non-discrimination law that exists right now is the Affordable Care Act that Obama signed in 2008, right? Isn't that when that one went into effect? And that one says that you cannot discriminate based on disability or any other protected class. But the concern right now with the pandemic is that if they do have a shortage of ventilators at any point in any state, there have been policies discussed and even drafted that would put, because of your disability, you would automatically be put to the back of the line. So if there was a shortage, your disability would be the deciding factor in why you don't get care. And luckily, it was really, really scary in March and the beginning of April, because those policies were coming out and nothing was officially being done about it. Luckily, a lot of advocates, including myself, wrote letters and called their senators, and the Health and Human Service Office of Civil Rights has issued an official statement that they can't do that. But it's, again, enforcement is the real problem. It's not necessarily the laws. That, you know, it's about, do we actually follow the laws? And so every state is having to kind of watch their Health and Human Service Department and their hospitals to make sure that they aren't violating this policy, even because, you know, despite that statement, you know, making sure that that actually doesn't get violated. Because if it does, you know, someone like me, for example, who is otherwise healthy but does have a smaller body size, for example, a doctor who doesn't know me, probably if they have a policy like that in place, would assume that I'm one of the people that shouldn't get it, you know. Or if you're older but very healthy, it doesn't matter because you're in the back of the line, you know what I mean? And so just trying to find a way, if there is ever a shortage in the state of Minnesota or in any other state, trying to find a way to make that wording not completely eliminate you from the running if you have a disability, just based on your disability. You know what I mean? There has to be a way that's less discriminatory. And I know that it's a little bit, it feels odd to people, but if you replace any other social group with that, like if you think about it by like, well, what if we did that for women? You know, it would obviously be discriminatory. It's just that we haven't been trained in disability rights or disability education to see our group is valuable enough to try to save. And so that's what we're, that's what activists are working on, is like, you can't just write off a whole group of people and say you have civil rights every other time, but not when there's scarce resources.
No kidding.
And let me know if that makes sense, but it's definitely a real concern. And at first when it started happening, the pandemic, I was worried about it, but I was like, well, surely that won't happen. But then you started reading these policies were being circulated to hospitals and stuff, and the fears are not unwarranted. And so it's just about staying vigilant. So if anyone in Minnesota does come out with a policy like that, what I would ask your audience and the rest of the people who care about that kind of stuff in Minnesota would be to definitely call the governor's office and senators and the Health and Human Service office and voice your complaint with that, because it's a civil rights issue, and you can't walk back civil rights right now. That would be very dangerous.
Right. So you mentioned, you are disabled, but you're not immunocompromised necessarily. Is it possible for decisions to be made without your consent, that you're not eligible for treatment because of that?
That's the fear, right?
Yeah.
Some of those policies really explicitly say, we will base the decision on likelihood to recover. And then some of those policies said, taking into consideration other disabilities or other comorbidities is what they call it, but that's the other word for disabilities, right? And so it would be coming down to who I happen to have in, treating me that day. You know what I'm saying? There would be no guarantee that I would have any kind of consideration. And even if they're immunocompromised, a lot of people do survive. It's just there just has to be a way where we're making these decisions without just seeing the diagnosis and saying, okay, well, that puts them at the back of the line. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that every disabled person or every able-bodied person would live or would necessarily, at some point, if there is shortages, maybe there has to be a lottery or something, or maybe there at least has to be a way where we're looking at the overall picture and not just looking at a list of diagnoses and saying, well, this is the reason they don't get care, is because of this word on the page, And the problem with something like the pandemic is I don't know if, the reason this comes so close to home is because I had respiratory failure when I was 21. And they basically decided that I had asthma and it wasn't diagnosed, but we didn't know that at the time. And so I was having a lot of problems breathing, and I went in to the hospital because I basically couldn't keep oxygen levels up, which is very similar to what happens in COVID, right? And so the doctor took one look at me. In real life, this actually happened, and I wasn't conscious, so my parents were in the room. And he said, well, she's so small, there's nothing I'll be able to do. You should say goodbye to her. And my mom, luckily, was like, what the heck? She has a bone disorder, not a lung disorder. That doesn't make any sense. So she got a second opinion. And that doctor said, well, if anyone else came in presenting those symptoms, I would have given them prednisone. He must have done that, though, right? And she said, no, he didn't do anything. And so the doctor said, well, I'm going to prescribe prednisone, and let me know what happens. And I was better 24 hours later, completely better. And I was going to die. So, the point is that being treated is a lot of times what keeps people alive, not whether or not they have a disability. And so, depending on the doctor that you get, if they don't value or understand that a disability doesn't necessarily mean your life isn't worth fighting for, or that because you look different, you can't be treated. Those are real assumptions, even not during a pandemic. And so during a pandemic, if you don't explicitly say, hey, we can't discriminate, I think it would, I know that it will happen because it's definitely happened to me already. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was no pandemic going on when that happened. And so it's just important to make sure doctors understand that quality of life is very subjective. So people with disabilities rate their quality of life generally about the same as everybody else, but it's not seen as valuable, from the outside. But I like being alive, and I would like to continue to
yeah,
do
you
so,
do.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think there's a real big educational gap and like understanding of what it means to have a disabled life. It doesn't mean that your life sucks. And a lot of times the parts of it that are hard are not like you, it's that society's not accessible, you know,
right.
Or the people don't understand that your life is valuable. And so we can't make a decision of like quality of life from the perspective of, well, if it's a disabled life,
yeah,
it's lower quality automatically, because that's just not true.
Thank goodness your mom was with you to advocate.
I know. And that's what freaks me out about something like COVID, is that a lot of times people aren't there, you know, mm-hmm. and you can't have your family there. And so how does that go down? And so the thing that we're doing is just being really, 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 really cautious and staying home. I mean, we're getting outside in our apartments or walking around outside with like face masks and stuff,
yeah.
but we're not going to risk it, because I personally don't feel that we have that figured out enough to trust that I would get the care that anyone else would get, you know.
Right.
Luckily, Minnesota is a pretty cool state. I haven't read anything yet about those policies being proposed here. And I know that Governor Walz, who I love, and I wish he was like our president or whatever, but like he's great. And he is making a commitment to really try to up capacity enough where you don't have to turn anyone away. And that would be my hope, that we can actually accomplish that. But I mean, there's a lot we don't know. And I think that we're not at the end of this. I think we're kind of ramping up, unfortunately. So
mm-hmm.
I just think it's important. And so that's the other reason it's important to stay home, is because a lot of people don't show symptoms, but there are so many people that just can't risk getting sick. And
right.
So, yeah.
Right. I've got people in my circle. Well, I like to think I'm pretty healthy, but I've got people in my circle who cannot acquire this thing, you know? And so
yep.
I'm a lunatic about my kid washing and everything. And
yep.
it's just, we got to take care of each other.
So. Yeah, and it's not, you know, a select few. I think everybody knows at least somebody.
Absolutely.
I mean, many, many people, I think everybody knows many people that would be very jeopardized by this.
Yeah.
If not, you know, even, you know, treatment rationing aside, there's a lot of people that really wouldn't fare well.
Yeah.
When if they got it. So it's cool to see the people who are really taking it seriously, because it gives, you know, it affirms that, like, oh, those people do have value in society, because
yeah.
here we are all trying to stay.
Well, then when you think it, take it one step further and you're in the hospital by yourself, if you get
yeah.
in the hospital, that's a real problem. I just want to remind the listeners, I'm talking with Galen Lee. She's a Duluth singer, songwriter, and violinist, and just all around incredible person. And you had a recent blog post. You described dread as a feeling you're feeling, but I don't think it was necessarily related to this stuff we were just talking about. Could you talk about what you meant by this odd feeling of dread that is just sort of underlying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that the word dread is what captures what I kind of have been feeling about this, because life in some ways, especially for us, because like once we got home, you know, we don't have regular 9-to-5 day jobs right now. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's life is almost kind of like normal, right? Like we're home. I mean, it's a little weird because we're not going outside that much. But like the idea that life seems relatively normal because we haven't felt a lot of direct impacts from COVID yet. Do you know what I mean? Like nobody we know personally has gotten it yet. But the predictions that you're hearing of, you know, 60% of the population is going to get it eventually. I mean, that's just like mind blowing. And knowing that something, what we're facing now is probably not the extent of what we will be facing.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of is a scary thing that you kind of just have to know is probably coming, but you can't really change it. You know what I mean? So you just got to do the best you can every day to cope with it. And it's just a weird feeling. I mean, I don't know. I had a surgery one time where it felt the same way. It was like I didn't want to have it, but I had to have it. And I knew it was coming, and every day it was getting closer, right? But it doesn't change the reality of having to get it. And I guess the dread comes in for me is not so much for myself, but just really hoping that people that we know don't get it, because it's like, you know. And so, yeah, it's a weird feeling. And I think a lot of days, obviously, I try to focus on, most days, I try to focus on what I'm grateful for. But even in that midst, I think one of the reasons people feel so, like, tired and disorganized or, like, just kind of like a sense of overwhelm is that your brain is constantly dealing with this feeling of dread that it can't do anything about, right? So you're just like processing this other layer of emotion that you wouldn't normally have to be dealing with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and that we've never processed.
No. Yeah. You know, it's given me a sense of solidarity in some ways with other countries. Like, I mean, there's a lot. Americans have been really shielded, I think, or many Americans, not every American, right? But in general, our society seems on the surface like it runs pretty smoothly and, you know, we have our basic needs met most of the time and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the reality is that life is very impermanent and, like, fragile and can be disrupted easily, and we don't have to deal with that reality very often. And so for everybody having to do it at the same time, I think is really weird and, like, interesting. But, you know, but it reminds me that this is not, like, the only time people have felt this way before, you know.
Right.
So it's kind of comforting to know that people all throughout time and all over the world have had to, like, live in these kind of terms before. And, it just kind of makes everything seem a little more real, I guess.
Right. What time are your concerts on Sundays?
They are at 2:00 Central Time, and they're on YouTube. So but I tried to make it as easy as possible. So my website is violinscratches.com, and the link, the little like window for the YouTube video, the one coming up is always going to be right there.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one is this Sunday at 2:00, and since it's supposed to be homegrown in Duluth, I'm going to have my friend Dave come on and do a little chat and maybe play a song with me.
Yay.
This week. Yeah, it's fun to try to think about ways to do special guests. That's been a nice challenge because we were woefully underprepared technology-wise for any of this, but we're slowly figuring it out and like upgrading little parts here and there when we can. And I'm hoping by the end of this, I will be a master of the live stream, because I think I want to keep doing them afterwards at least once in a while. It's been a really neat exercise in connecting people from all over the place.
Yeah, we've really been forced to sort of do some workarounds that we've never had to quite do.
I know, it's like, oh man, like you realize, oh, my little Chromebook and my wireless hotspot internet is just not going to cut it in the age of, you know, like there's a lot of things that I was like, well, I'm going to have to change this because this is not going to work for the next few months or whatever we need to do this for.
So you have a new song out called Rebuild Minnesota.
Well, it's just called Rebuild.
Oh.
Although, clever. Rebuild Minnesota would have been good.
Oh. That I added that myself, apparently.
Yes, I did.
Can you tell us about the song, and then I want to play it, if that's all right. Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
It is an instrumental piece that I created. I was visualizing, you know, like fall or the idea of everything kind of culminating at this point and then stillness and then rebuilding from there. And I love making instrumental pieces. I use my looping pedal, and so it's all recorded live. There's no tracking or anything. It's just all done in one take.
Mm-hmm.
But this tune is one that was kind of loosely based on a dance that I performed the soundtrack for a children's dance troupe. They're called Young Dance down in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And we kind of co-created their recital. And so I would play along to what they were doing, and we would kind of interact with each other. And this was one of the pieces that came out of that. And it was probably my favorite one that we did together. So, yeah, so this is Rebuilt.
Excellent. Thank you, Galen. I'm going to play the song, and you have a wonderful day. Thanks for all the beauty and bright awareness that you bring into our world. You make the world a better place.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, thank you for having me, and I hope you stay safe and healthy and take care of yourself.
You too. That's Galen Lee, Minnesota musician, songwriter, violinist, all-around great person. Here's her new song, Rebuild.